you get to go first. Would you care to reserve any of your time for rebuttal?
Thank you, yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
Okay, we'll be glad to hear from you when you're ready then.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the Court. Again, this is Elizabeth Fitzgerald on behalf of the Commonwealth. And we're here on a Commonwealth pretrial appeal. The trial court in this case erred in granting the motion to suppress on a basis that was not litigated by the parties below, namely the training and reliability of the drug dog that was used in this case. On brief, it appears the parties are in some disagreement over the rationale for the trial court's ruling. However, the Commonwealth brought the matter to this court or to the trial court's attention below, gave the court an opportunity to resolve that ambiguity, and the court did not contradict the Commonwealth's position and essentially acquiesced in the trial court's understanding of its ruling, entering an order merely that said for the reasons stated on the record.
Let me see if we can cut to the chase a little bit here. It seems to me the record is a little bit muddied here, but would it be fair to say, or would you agree that the trial court at least considered, at least apparently considered two arguably separate issues? One, the application of Rodriguez to the facts of this case, and second, the foundation with respect to the training of the dog and his handler with respect to detecting, and I guess in this case, firearms that were located in the vehicle. Is that a fair summary of the two issues the trial court seemed to be relying on here?
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree, except I would note that to the extent the trial court did recess to consider Rodriguez and the parties argued Rodriguez to the trial court, the trial court's ruling itself did not speak in terms of Rodriguez. There is no mention there of impermissibly prolonging the stop. There is no mention of the police officer's diligence, et cetera. So although the trial court did have an opportunity to review Rodriguez, the Commonwealth's position is from his ruling, it's clear that what he ruled on was not Rodriguez, but rather that foundational aspect that the court has just mentioned, the training and reliability of the drug dog used in this case.
Well, to put it in perspective, it seems to me Rodriguez stands for the proposition that when you make a traffic stop and you're issuing a summons, which is with the case here, you can't prolong the summons for some ulterior purpose, or you can't prolong the process of issuing the summons, I guess I should say, for an ulterior purpose to try to develop some other rationale if it's not already readily apparent that there's either reasonable suspicion or probable cause. You basically issue the summons and move on. Is that a fair summary of what Rodriguez holds?
Yes, Your Honor.
Then in this case, though, we have the situation where the officer was clearly writing the summons, and these other Portsmouth police officers appeared, and it seems to me the record is clear. At one point, as the officer was in the process, I guess, of the officer who stopped the defendant in this case, was in the process of explaining what he had done with the summons, this other police officer came up and interrupted and asked advised him to stay away from the dog while the dog was being run around the vehicle. How do you think we should apply Rodriguez and our holding in Matthews applied Rodriguez here in the Commonwealth to that situation? Is that a departure from the summons process?
Yes, Your Honor, I will address Rodriguez. However, I would note that those factual findings and that legal analysis was not undertaken by the court below in this case. And at this point in this interlocutory appeal, the Commonwealth believes it would not be proper to reach a Rodriguez analysis in this case because the trial court did not rule on Rodriguez and we're missing factual determinations.
I guess that's another debate we could have, but setting aside that point, if the Commonwealth's position is the trial court didn't rule at all on Rodriguez and based its ruling solely on the lack of a foundation for the use of the dog, why isn't that enough to sustain the motion to suppress here? Because there clearly is no foundation in the record for, as far as the dog and his handler are concerned, in terms of detecting firearms or gunpowder or explosives or anything else like that.
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe that the Commonwealth wouldn't have a burden to put on that evidence affirmatively absent a challenge from the defendant in that regard below. The defendant's motion and obviously also the oral arguments heard before the trial court did not focus on that issue, and the Commonwealth only has a burden to come forward with that evidence in regards to the the way in which the stop is challenged by the defendant. So because there was no evidence in this regard and no challenge in this regard, there was no evidence in the record for the trial court to make that determination.
But you don't think the Commonwealth has any burden when there's a warrantless search? The Commonwealth has no burden at all except to refute whatever allegations are made by the defendant?
Your Honor, the Commonwealth's burden is to prove that the challenged action didn't violate the defendant's constitutional rights. And in this case,
you cite Russell in that regard, but Russell itself cites Simmons versus the Commonwealth. And what Simmons says is the Commonwealth has the burden of proving the legitimacy of a warrantless search and seizure, which I think has always been my understanding of the law. Whenever you have a warrantless search, it's presumptively unconstitutional, and the Commonwealth has the burden of rebutting the presumption. So if the Commonwealth does nothing to rebut the presumption, then where does that leave us?
Your Honor, again, I would say that it's with respect to the way that the argument was framed below, and I would direct the Court's attention to Combs versus the United States Supreme Court case where the issue of standing was taken up for the first time on appeal, and the defendant didn't have an opportunity to put on evidence of that below. Standing is also always the defendant's burden to say why he has an expectation of privacy in this place, and there the U.S. Supreme Court remanded for the parties to litigate the issue in the first instance in the trial court. The Commonwealth is in a similar position here, having not had the opportunity to put on this evidence because the defendant, frankly, did not challenge the drug dog in this way.
Maybe I'm missing something here, but typically when you have a hearing, I mean, I guess I'm getting back to evidence 101 here, but when you have a hearing, here the issue was whether the Commonwealth could rebut the presumption of unconstitutionality and justify a search and seizure based upon probable cause. That's the Commonwealth's burden. The Commonwealth has to put on evidence to that effect, and to put on evidence to that effect, they have to lay a proper foundation for the admissibility of that evidence. If they don't do that, which seems to be what the trial court was ruling here, at least in part, setting Rodriguez aside, then, you know, it seems to me you don't assume it. I mean, in any situation, until your opponent puts on the evidence, you don't really have an opportunity to object to whether they're laying a proper foundation until they either do or they don't. It seems to me the appropriate time to object is when they don't, and that's what happened here.
Well, let me, after you answer Judge Humphrey's question, I have a question for you as well, Mrs. Joe, but I want to give you a chance to answer that first.
Yes, Your Honor. So to Judge Humphrey's point, there was no objection raised on that ground because there was no argument in that regard. And I would liken this in this situation to expert testimony coming in or to hearsay evidence coming in. We had the dog's handler in this case testified that the dog did alert on the car, and absent any challenge to that dog's credibility, it's just like any other expert witness or any other evidence that's coming in. There was no basis to undermine, or there were no facts and evidence to undermine the drug dog's credibility. And absent any challenge from the defendant, I would submit that the trial court erred in finding this dog to be unreliable. His reliability was not challenged, and there is nothing in the record that the defendant can point to support the trial court's ruling in that regard. So I would say that it's without support in the record. It's plainly wrong. To the extent that there was no factual development of that issue in the event that the court disagrees with my analysis of the Commonwealth's burden in the absence of a challenge from the defendant on this particular issue.
Judge O'Brien has a question.
Yeah, let me go back for a minute here. The defendant, the basis for the defendant's motion was essentially Rodriguez, that this is a violation of Rodriguez. Would you agree with me on that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And then the trial judge has a sort of a couple of paragraphs where he talks about the dog and that people can make up things about the dog, but says, I don't find that this happened in this case. And basically, he just says that I find the defendant's motion is well-founded, I'm going to sustain his motion to suppress, without specifying the grounds particularly on which he's sustaining the motion to suppress. And then the Commonwealth files a motion to reconsider, and the judge says, basically, I'm going to grant the motion to suppress on the grounds that he doesn't specify the grounds, but he alludes back to the original motion being filed, which would be based on Rodriguez. So I'm not sure about the conclusion or where you draw the conclusion that it was because of the dog as opposed to a Rodriguez violation.
Yes, Your Honor. So the final order that was entered, and it's on appendix page 66, says that it's granting the motion for the reasons stated on the record. And as the court has noted, those reasons pertain largely to the training and reliability of the police dog that was used in this case. Having had the opportunity to review Rodriguez before making this ruling, if the court was going to issue a ruling saying that the traffic stop was impermissibly extended or the officer deviated from his traffic mission, and that kind of language that we would expect in a Rodriguez analysis, the court certainly had the opportunity to do so. But instead, the Commonwealth's position is that he clearly based his ruling on the training and reliability of that police dog. And the Commonwealth gave the trial court an opportunity to say, no, that you've misunderstood me or that wasn't the basis for my ruling in the motion to reconsider. And having not taken that opportunity that the Commonwealth gave it, and relying instead on the reasons articulated on the record, the Commonwealth's position is that that order, relying on the reasons stated from the record and the lack of any language that we would expect from a Rodriguez analysis, combined with the trial court's silence in the face of the Commonwealth's interpretation of its order, combined, those circumstances would support our position as the court's ruling on appeal.
Cheryl, assuming we did get the Rodriguez issue, what's your position with respect to whether or not the Portsmouth police officer's actions with respect to the dog, how do you think we should apply that factual situation to a Rodriguez analysis?
Yes, Your Honor, and I know the court mentioned earlier reconciling this case with the Matthews decision, which is a published decision from this court. The police officer's actions in this case did not impermissibly extend the traffic stop. The time that we're focusing on, I believe that both parties agree the officer was diligent in his traffic mission up until the point where he finished his summons paperwork in the police car and then got out to speak with the Portsmouth officers who had arrived on the scene during the time where he was looking for information about the defendant and looking at his criminal record.
I guess the focus of my question is, let's assume that for the purposes of my question that this particular officer did absolutely nothing beyond the book, basically. He was writing the summons and he was explaining the summons and he ultimately was going to have the individual sign the summons and be on his way. You have these other police officers who show up and basically interfere or stick their noses in and explain about this what they're going to do with this drug dog. How are we to apply Rodriguez to that kind of a situation? That seems to me that's a little. It's not obviously the fact situation in Rodriguez didn't involve an extraneous interference by law enforcement officers from another jurisdiction, but that's what we have here.
Yes, Your Honor, and I would agree. This is a situation that is different from the factual situation that was contemplated in Rodriguez. It's somewhat unique in that we have a Chesapeake police officer who crosses over into a Portsmouth jurisdiction. Certainly, it's reasonable for him to confer with local police officers. The Portsmouth officers indicate that they are familiar with the defendant. He's a Portsmouth local. They have additional database information that that Officer Slotsky doesn't have. And so to the extent that there is conferring between those two parties, that is fully encompassed within the traffic mission. And when to continue on to when the parties are approaching back to the defendant's car, the defendant himself notably gets out of the vehicle, approaches the officers, and is then told, you know, for his safety, he needs to stand to the side. Officer Sawatsky during that time was attempting to explain the traffic summons. The defendant argued with him back and forth for a while about whether or not the license plate was visible, and actually it's during that argument, while he's trying to talk his way out of a ticket, that the drug dog alerts.
Mrs. Gerald, I've got a question. The discussion was, so back to when the dog is going around the van and the Chesapeake officer is talking to the defendant and explaining to the defendant, well, you know, when I tried to get you to stop, you didn't stop, you kept driving, and the defendant explained, well, there was a train track and this and that and the other thing. That discussion, is that related to the officer's suspicion of some other crime, or is that related to the issuance of the summons?
That's related to the issuance of the summons.
How?
Because the officer is explaining to the defendant the reason for the stop, which the defendant asked. In response to a direct question from the defendant, you know, why are you stopping me? What are we doing here? The police officer explained why the defendant was pulled over in the first place. And that is a normal interaction where the where the police officer is explaining why the defendant was pulled over. That is part of the traffic mission, educating the defendant as to what the purpose for the stop is. There, the conversation, as the court notes, you know, kind of takes a left turn where we're talking about, you know, whether that's true or not, and it's not ultimately what he ends up being summoned for. But that conversation between the police officer is the same conversation that would happen in any traffic stop when the officer explains why I stopped you. You know, were you speeding, were your lights out, et cetera. So that conversation there is related to the officer's traffic mission.
Yeah, but again, following up on Judge Decker's question, what isn't related, it seems to me, to the traffic mission is the, and I think it's clear that they can run the drug dog around the car as long as it doesn't prolong the stop to do so, but when the Chesapeake officer interrupts when the Portsmouth officer interrupts the Chesapeake officer who's explaining the summons situation and basically says, instructs the defendant to basically stay away from the dog while they do all this, you know, I guess my concern is that's clearly outside of the process of issuing the summons, and it does delay the issuance of the summons in a de minimis way, but Rodriguez makes it pretty clear that even a de minimis delay that's not related to the issuance of the summons or to the traffic stop is unconstitutional. So that's my concern. Can you satisfy it?
I'll try, Your Honor. So I have two responses to that. First is that the defendant's actions precipitated some of that conversation. The defendant got out of the car, he approached the officers, he's walking around while the dog is being brought out. The officers have to react to the situation as it happens. You know, none of these interactions are pristine. And so to the extent the defendant's getting out of the car when he was not asked to get out of the car precipitated that conversation with the Chesapeake police officers, I think that can certainly be taken, or the Portsmouth officer rather, taken into account in determining whether this was part of the traffic mission. And secondly, I would suggest that those two courses of actions proceeded simultaneously. While Sawatsky was diligently pursuing his traffic mission, the Portsmouth police officers had this same conversation, and those two actions proceeding simultaneously certainly wouldn't measurably extend the duration of this stop. And that's consistent with this court's case law, for example, in Marshall, which is an unpublished opinion where the police officer was talking with other officers while he called the canine. Officers are allowed to do two things at once, and I would submit that this is a circumstance where those two lines of investigation were proceeding at the same time, if not precipitated by the defendant's own actions, and just the extent that, you know, he was the one, in a sense, that caused this interaction to go on longer than it has.
And you're going to start getting into your rebuttal time. I just want to let you know that. You can keep going if you want, or you do have the 3 minutes left.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal.
Right, Mr. Oliver?
Thank you, Your Honors. That may please the court. Once again, I'm Floyd Oliver. I represent Mr. Rivera, the appellee.
Mr. Oliver, let me start you off by, I know on brief you assert that once the police officer finished writing out the summons, the stop was over. Is that still your position?
Yes, Your Honor.
The code makes it clear that before the summons, as part of the summons process, the officer has to secure a written promise to appear on a date certain. Now, typically, anybody who's ever been stopped and gotten a ticket knows that the officer is going to explain, you know, your obligation to appear and have you sign and explain that if you don't appear, there are serious consequences. Why would we not assume that the stop isn't over until the statute has been satisfied and your client has executed the written promise to appear by signing off on the summons and getting a copy before he can drive away?
Well, the court says the authority for the stop ends once all tasks related to the stop are completed or should have been completed. After Sawatsky finishes writing his summons, he doesn't just go over to Mr. Rivera and explain what's going on. Instead, he walks back to the Portsmouth officers. He doesn't ask them at all about his criminal history. He immediately asks them to run the dogs. he brings them over with him, which he didn't have to do, and instead of explaining what the summons was, he allows the Portsmouth officer to just take over and begin explaining the dog process. So at that point, you know, if he had just gotten Mr. Rivera to sign the paperwork, then he would have been diligently pursuing the investigation. But that's not what he did.
Mr. Fisher, let me just ask you a question.
Oliver.
I'm sorry, Mr. Oliver. Sorry about that. I know who you are. When the Chesapeake officer went over to the, after he had completed the summons, and went over to the Portsmouth officers, there was a discussion about the criminal history in Portsmouth, was there not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And just let me finish. Now, that piece would be consistent with officer safety, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so let's assume the dog wasn't there. Would you have an issue with the Chesapeake officer going over to the Portsmouth police and saying, I hear you have some additional criminal information, yes, it's related to carjacking, blah, 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 and then the Chesapeake officer goes back over to the defendant. Is there any problem with that?
Well, Your Honor, it depends on what the officer does next. If the officer begins to engage him with discussions about his criminal history, I would say yes, absolutely.
How is that not related? Okay, criminal history, but...
Right.
Okay, but let's assume he went back over to the defendant and said, can I pat you down for safety? Is that okay still?
Your Honor, I think under Rodriguez, it would not be okay still, because the court says that the stop can't be measurably extended without further reasonable articulable suspicion of criminal activity. Now, unless he sees something himself that would give rise to the belief that Mr. Rivera is engaged in criminal activity, I would submit to the court that merely learning about some criminal actions in his past doesn't furnish the suspicion required to allow that to happen.
Okay, I understand your point about a new crime, but clearly Rodriguez and Cabelas and the other Supreme Court cases allow officers, when they're conducting a legitimate traffic stop and they're going to issue a summons, to ensure their own safety while they're doing so.
Yes, Your Honor. And the court in Rodriguez explains that officers can take negligible steps to make sure the traffic stop is pursued safely. That includes checking for outstanding warrants and checking to see if he's licensed, if the car is registered to him. Officer Sawatsky did all of these things, and he extended the traffic stop without observing any smells, without observing anything in plain view. He never testified that he was in fear for his safety either.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is exactly where your position is that the extension of the stop is. Your position is the extension of the stop is the warning concerning the dog and moving the dog around the van at the same time that the Chesapeake officer is talking to him.
Correct, but I would say that the running of the dog began before the Chesapeake officer began explaining the summons. They explained what the process, the Portsmouth officers explained the process of running the dogs before Officer Sawatsky even began to explain what was on the summons or what was going on.
I thought the record, there was some indication in the record that the city of Portsmouth apparently maintains a separate database on some kind of criminal activity. So, I guess to follow up on Judge Decker's point, if it's okay in the course of a stop to check out criminal history, or you know, if they're wanted or whatever, And you can do that through the, you know, the computer, the radio. You could also do the same thing by walking up to the officer who's standing right next to you and says, we have a separate database, and asking him to check him out through that and verify that he's not wanted or something through whatever that database is. And I don't see that the law draws much of a distinction. If in the course of doing that, they then begin the running of the drug dog and it doesn't prolong the stop because, in this case, there's apparently some evidence your client had some questions that he wanted answered, and of course, I guess the stop isn't over until both sides decide the stop is over. So I'm trying to fit, you know, the facts of this case into the parameters of Rodriguez, and it seems to me that Judge Decker's point that if it's okay to, as part of a standard operating procedure, whenever you make a traffic stop, to go run the individual through the computer to determine if they're wanted, and you have information, there's another separate local database that you have immediate access to, if you just simply walk over and ask a police officer who's standing a few feet away from you, that there's really no functional distinction between those two.
Right. Well, Your Honor, I think it's significant, the order of events. Mm-hmm. Officer Sawatsky learned that Mr. Rivera was in the Portsmouth database while he was writing the summons. All he learned was that there was some potentially violent crime in his past. He didn't learn that there were any outstanding warrants. He didn't learn that there was no kind of alert that Mr. Rivera was possibly armed and dangerous. There was nothing. So while I agree that it's legal for Officer Sawatsky to converse with the Portsmouth officers about his criminal history, if there's nothing there, there's nothing there. And I'll just repeat that the stop can't be extended unless there is other reasonable, articulable suspicion. And I'm unaware of any authority that says that having a criminal history furnishes that reasonable, articulable suspicion. Officer Sawatsky could not point to anything in particular that led him to believe that the stop should be extended. Now, if I could just quickly...
Mr. Oliver, I don't think the Commonwealth even argues on appeal that there is independent reasonable suspicion of another crime.
Okay, well...
I don't think that they do.
Well, they're leaving an important part of Rodriguez out because that's what the court's ruling is. My argument is that once Officer Sawatsky fails to immediately give Mr. Rivera that summons and allows the Portsmouth officer to take over, the stop became measurably extended by several minutes. The court in Rodriguez says the stop can't be measurably extended without further reasonable, articulable suspicion. Everything has to be related to the original purpose of the stop, unless they can point to particularized facts of the...
Well, I think the record is pretty clear here, it seems to me. At least there's nothing in the record that suggests that the stop was prolonged in the sense that your client received his summons and signed it, promising to appear, and couldn't leave because the dog was still, you know, in the process of sniffing around the car. Seems to me the record is, to the extent there's any record at all here, it's more along the lines of he had not yet gotten to the point, he was still asking the officer questions and getting answers, and hadn't signed the summons yet, promising to appear at some point in the future for court when the dog alerted. So, I mean, it seems to me that if it's prolonged at all, it wasn't... It was prolonged by the simple act of the officer detouring on his way, you know, as he finished writing the summons, detouring over to the Portsmouth officers and then back to your client. And the record isn't clear how long that took, I guess, but there was that short conversation where the Chesapeake officer agreed to allow the Portsmouth officers to do the drug, run the dog around the car while he was, you know, issuing the summons. So I'm not sure where that leaves us in terms of the record, but it seems to me, as I said, this record's pretty muddled, but I think a fair reading of it is that your client was certainly not standing there waiting for the dog to finish the search after he had already received his summons.
Well, Your Honor, I would just respond that they began running the dog before the summons was even handed to him.
And there's nothing wrong with that, is there, under Rodriguez?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's exactly what Rodriguez forbids. The stop wouldn't have been extended as long as it had been if they had just handed him the summons instead of bringing the dog over as well.
I thought your answer, maybe I misunderstood you, but I thought your answer to Judge Decker, one of her questions was that had this had these portrait officers simply walked the dog up and around the car while the Chesapeake officer was discussing the summons with your client, there wouldn't be a problem here. Did I mishear that?
So your question is, if while he was explaining the summons, they walked. Yeah, you're. I think that would be fair, but that's not what happened, Judge. Instead, they brought the dog over first. The Portsmouth officer explained the process of walking the dog around. Mr. Rivera got agitated and asked why they were stopping him, and then Officer Sawatsky explained the summons. That there is where the extension lies. Now, I think the greater duration of the duration of the stop wouldn't have been as long as it was if Officer Sawatsky had just explained the summons. So
this is Judge O'Brien. You're saying that by explaining to the driver, explaining to your client what was happening with the dog, that was an impermissible extension?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
So they should have run the dog around without explaining it to him, let the dog bite him if he got in the way. Is that it?
Well, Judge, I would say they shouldn't have brought the dog over in the first place. Instead,
well, no, I think Rodriguez is clear. They can certainly do that as long as it doesn't prolong the stop. They can run the dog all day long as long as the officer's still writing the summons.
Well,
so did you want to respond to the Commonwealth's argument regarding the foundation issue?
Sure, Your Honor. Now, the Commonwealth is correct. We did not bring that up in the trial court, but I think the court's pretty clear in the statement of its ruling that it wasn't ruling based on anything that wasn't argued. It was merely posing hypothetical. The court states three times, I don't suggest that this occurred. I don't want to suggest that that occurred today. I don't think that's the case at all. The court goes on to say that the United States Supreme Court has ruled on this exact issue. And I think by saying that, the court was basing its ruling on what was argued before it, on United States versus Rodriguez. Now, even if the court should agree with the Commonwealth attorney that the court ruled on a base not argued before, we would ask the court to rule that the trial court reached the right result for the wrong reason. I think the court reviews the record. I and the Commonwealth attorney developed the facts extensively. And I also argued Rodriguez to the trial court. And then finally, I would argue that exclusion is the proper remedy in this case. I understand the exclusionary rule only applies if it would act to deter future Fourth Amendment violations. I think exclusion in this case is the correct remedy. Officer Sawatsky should have, once he finished writing the summons, after not discovering any sign of criminal activity by Mr. Rivera, not discovering that he had any warrants out for his arrest, nor discovering any warning about Mr. Rivera, he should have just handed the summons to Mr. Rivera and began to explain it. Suppression in this case will make officers act more diligently in pursuing their investigations. And I think that it'll send a message to Chesapeake police officers that they can't just use it, and I think this is what the trial judge was talking about. Even if it didn't occur in this case, in the future they won't be able to use dogs as a pretext to get into citizens' vehicles. And like
all
that,
Mr. Oliver, I think we understand your argument. Your time is up, Ms. Fitzgerald. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. To return to the Rodriguez issue, with respect to when Portsmouth and the Chesapeake officer approached the defendant's vehicle, Officer Sawatsky has a duty to ensure that this traffic stop happens safely, and that includes the defendant's safety as well as the safety of the police officers. when that defendant is out of the car and that there is a drug dog on the scene, which we have in the record, evidence that the...
Oh, no, he's a drug dog because nobody established foundation for anything that this dog can do. We don't know if it's drugs or explosives or what. I mean, we just know he's a dog.
I didn't misspeak there. So, but when this trained police animal is outside and the defendant is outside the car, the police officer's duty to ensure this traffic stop happens safely also encompasses the defendant. And where the defendant is already out of the car, the officer's request to have him stand to the side and stand back by the back of the police car while everyone goes over what was going on in the summons was certainly a reasonable request. And ultimately, in these cases, the touchstone of the Fourth Amendment analysis, as this court has determined, is reasonableness. The police officers could have gotten the defendant out of the car just to tell him about what was going on anyway. The fact that
Mr.
he got out...
Let's go back to the warning about the dog. Assuming that warning is a correct and a responsible thing for the officer to do, does it not fly in the face of Rodriguez if it, in fact, by giving the warning itself, it prolongs the stop?
No, Your Honor. Again, I would submit that, or I disagree with your characterization in that... the police officer there is ensuring the defendant's safety and the safety of the traffic mission, be that the police officer's safety in confronting an unknown individual or that individual's safety during a roadside encounter or, in this case, during an encounter with a police animal. The safety of all the people involved here is part of the traffic mission and is not prolonging that stop in any way. It's related to the traffic mission.
Let me ask one last question, at least on my part. Let's set aside the Rodriguez issue for a moment, and I'll give you this hypothetical. Let's say we just had a traffic stop like this, no dog involved, and the police, in the course of the traffic stop, let's say they did have a dog in the car, and the dog barked, and so the police searched the car. And a motion to suppress was filed. The motion to suppress was just a boilerplate. They violated my constitutional rights because they searched my car without probable cause. If the Commonwealth put on evidence, like we have in this case, that the dog just barked and there's no evidence of the training of the dog or the training of the handler in identifying drugs or guns or anything else, what would your position be with respect to whether the trial court would be correct in suppressing the evidence? In a situation like that, if the only evidence of contraband was a barking dog without any evidence of the dog's training and experience or that of his handler.
And in that hypothetical, Judge Humphreys, the Commonwealth is relying on probable cause from the dog's alert to search the car?
Yeah, that's all there is, just the barking dog.
Sure. Well, I believe that there was testimony in this case that the dog did alert. And so in a case where we have a dog that's barking,
let's just say alert. I mean, I don't know what the alert here was, whether it was a bark or a particular stance or whatever. I've seen it all kinds of ways. But I'm just simply talking about a lack of foundation for training, whether that would ever supply probable cause, without anything else.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the trial court in reaching its conclusion is bound by the evidence that's before it. So in that situation, if it was never raised in the trial court, if the defense never challenged the credibility of that drug dog and the court found the dog was not credible, there needs to be something in the record to support that conclusion.
But here is the written motion. I'm looking at paragraph 14 of the written motion to suppress that was filed by Mr. Oliver in this case. It says this investigation, I assume they mean the search, was conducted without reasonable articulable suspicion. I think that probably should be probable cause, in violation of the Fourth Amendment prohibition against unreasonable searches and seizures. And any evidence uncovered as a result of this investigation must be suppressed. Doesn't that cover a situation where a search is done without probable cause?
Perhaps in the abstract, Your Honor. However, there was no evidence in the hearing that the trial court could have relied upon in reaching that conclusion. And
on the contrary, there's a lack of evidence that caused the trial court to reach the conclusion it did.
Right, and I guess I would agree that there is a lack of evidence, frankly, either way. However, what we do have is Officer Gillette, who was the canine handler who testified that he was the dog's handler and testified that the dog alerted and testified about the dog's alert there. He was there. He was present. He testified to the dog's alerting, and absent any kind of cross-examination or any other evidence to undermine his testimony, what the trial court is left with is the testimony of a credible witness saying, "This is I'm the dog's handler, and this is what the dog did." So in that circumstance, there was nothing to undermine that officer's credibility, nothing to undermine that dog's credibility, and there was nothing for the trial court to base its ruling on there. In a situation where we had a complete...
The trial court could assess credibility here, found that there was insufficient evidence to assign much weight to the fact that the dog alerted, at least based on what the trial court said. Now, the trial court admittedly raised that sua sponte, but under a... seems to me, and you guys argue this on the behalf of the Commonwealth all the time, but under a right result, wrong reason analysis, I mean, the trial court could raise an evidentiary issue sua sponte, and if the record supports it, aren't we bound to affirm on that basis?
Very briefly, Your Honor, two responses. One, I think in the suppression context, this is different. Suppression should be the court's last resort, not its first impulse. And for the court to suppress on a ground that was raised sua sponte is not in keeping with the Fourth Amendment jurisprudence of this court. And second, I would submit that the right result, wrong reason doctrine would not apply in this interlocutory setting. And we're not dealing with a presumptively valid final order or the deference that this court pays to those kind of judgments. In the interlocutory setting, I don't believe that that kind of a rule would apply here. We have a mechanism to raise cross error on these appeals, and there was no cross error raised to the trial court's ruling the way that it did.
Right.
And I believe that I have probably far exceeded my time, but I'm happy to answer further questions.
You beat you up pretty good on this, so we'll cut you some slack. So. Judge O'Brien, do you have any questions?
No, thanks.
All right, Ms. Rollo, Ms. Fitzgerald, we appreciate your argument today. The court will adjourn the conference. You all have a good day.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. You too.